I hate to be the party pooper, but we're running at an hour.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 347, recorded on April 8th, 2014.
Hello, and welcome to the 347th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 180th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback and listener feedback section.
We're going to move on to what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? Ooh, I've been playing the Guess What? PaulNovak.com is available game. Ooh, sorry. See, this is what happens when you distract me in the middle of the show.
Are you still playing Dungeon Keeper?
I am still playing Dungeon Keeper. It takes longer to load the game than it does to play it. So that's unfortunate. Ooh, I've been playing Disney's Lost Light on mobile. I don't know if I talked about that one yet.
No, but before you do, did you ever get a fix on that $200 Facebook game that you did you ever manage to get the achievement out of the way?
Oh yes, I'm still on Kitchen Scramble. I finally got that pop up out of the way. By the way, I really have to say that I was very disappointed that the makers of Kitchen Scramble did not contact me back. Very bad customer support. They never contacted me back. Another player said, yeah, just do this and this and that'll take care of it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a week. It was like over a week ago. I have heard nothing. Now, to be fair, they might have emailed me and perhaps it got caught in my spam filter. I don't think so, but it might be. So yes, I've been continuing on Kitchen Scramble, and I am not at all ashamed to say that I am one of their whales. They came out with a new region, and let me tell you, I'm like I've completed all but like five boards in this game. I'm so close I could taste it.
You know,
so what's gonna happen is when your back finally gives out and you're not able to leave the house, your life will be saved when the kitchen insanity people realize, oh my gosh, we haven't heard from Paul. We better send somebody out and make sure he's okay.
Yeah, right. That's when they'll find me and with my corpse eaten by my 20 cats, right? That's a funny joke we have about adults living alone.
When you say whale in that context, I always think of Casino, you know? And
That's where the term originates from.
Yeah.
The thing is,
that's exactly what it originates from. I am a devotee of that game, and I have absolutely no problem spending my money on it because it's fun. Because it doesn't keep hitting me up for money.
Until you need help from developers and they're nowhere to be seen.
I mean, like I said, to be fair, it might have gotten caught in my spam filter. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Anything's possible.
Speaking of that, I don't know if you guys heard the controversy today about the crew. The crew was announced today that first off, it's going to be online only.
For those who don't know, the crew is Ubisoft's new racer. So
the crew is Ubisoft's new racer, open world driving simulator kind of thing. The first bit of news was that if you lose your internet connection, it's going to bounce you out and send you to the title screen. And the second thing is that their fast travel is going to be microtransaction driven.
Ouch.
So you're going to pay the full price for the game, $60, but there will be microtransactions for fast travel. There will be microtransactions for upgraded car parts. People are not happy.
Mm. So what have you been playing, Jordan?
What have I been playing? I keep getting sucked back into Paper Trail on Infamous Second Son. They keep releasing new content for Paper Trail. Mm-hmm. So it's a continual back and forth between the console and the Paper Trail web interface to unlock more sections of the game. And I think I'm all caught up now. I've done episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the Paper Trail, but I'm sure there will be more coming.
Okay. I've been playing a lot of Dragon Age 2. Because I found the cheat codes, and now there's a script that's kill all hostiles, in which every enemy on the screen just dies, you know, and that's made the game a lot more fun for me, because Dragon Age 2, it has this thing in which combat, yeah, it's in real time, but then after you finish one wave, another wave just jumps in, another wave jumps in, and it just gets boring. So
I played the demo, and it struck me as kind of being Dynasty Warriors-like.
Sort of. It's a little bit more involved than that. But at least now, I'm enjoying the story without the clunky combat. I'm going to see if Dragon Age Origins has that feature, has that console commands, you know, just so that I can... Just so I can get past the stupid combat and just... Because I really enjoy the story and I, you know, and it's... Combat is the least interesting part of that game for me. So this might interest Jordan. I also purchased Titanfall.
I saw you playing Titanfall the other night.
Yeah, and I'm really enjoying it. Although I will say this, I cannot stand the deathmatching. The deathmatching is by far the least interesting part of that game. It's not... By the way, they call it attrition... Basically, you just get points for killing other men. It's basically deathmatch. It's just deathmatch of another name. But I did
That's the mode where you start out in the mechs, though, right?
No, I mean, that's not one. Oh. I think that's last mech standing or something. I haven't tried that mode yet. But I have been enjoying hard points because the thing is that Respawn was very intelligent in that if you do your job and decide you're going to guard the points instead of having to go out and kill and all that stuff, you get a lot of points for doing that. You know, you get a lot of points for sticking around the hard point that you own and kill people trying to get in and all that stuff, but not, you know, going out and doing it. You can really get a lot of points just... Hold on one second. You get a lot of points for just doing that. And, you know, it's great to be rewarded for actually, you know, doing your job to help your players win. Without other certain games, that the only thing that you get tallied for is, who got the most kills? You know,
right.
I helped our team win, but I didn't get any points because I didn't kill anybody. Here, it's like you stuck around, you prevented your hard point from being captured. You killed the occasional person trying to get in, you know. So I really enjoyed that part of it. And the thing is, I didn't play any Call of Duty multiplayer, so it's not something I'm used to, you know, because from what I understand, that one of the things about Titanfall is that any Call of Duty player will be instantly acclimated to it, right? But I'm having fun. Also, I find myself not riding inside my Titan that much. I'm using my Titan as a decoy because people will start attacking my Titan. You can have it on auto, right? So I get out of my Titan, I leave it there for people to be attracted to, and then when they come to try and hijack or whatever, I just shoot them dead from my corner there and say, ha, you wanted my Titan? Well, guess what? I'm over here, not there.
Well, that was one of the tactics that I tried using in the training mission, and it wouldn't let me jump out. You know, I thought that,
things of the game.
Right. But I was thinking in a combat situation, yes, pop out of the Titan, set it to defend, and then the Titan is attacking from one direction, you attack from the other direction, you have your built-in single-player pincher movement, and exactly.
Sort of like the engineer, you know, when you have the turret going out, except mine is, right, is the Titan. So, you know, the thing is, I've only played a couple of hours of it, and I really want to get to play, you know, as soon as possible, but I can't do it until after PAX East, you know? And I've notified the few friends that I have that have Titanfall and are playing it on the Xbox One, that I'm now available to play Titanfall. By the way, the 360 version of the Titanfall is coming out, I think, next week. It's going to be interesting to see how, you know, degraded that version is, you know?
They did release video of it, supposedly moving at 30 frames per second, which everybody seems to be very happy about.
Okay. So anyways, so that's what I've been playing. And like I said, I can't wait to play some more Titanfall. You know, and I can see why people enjoy Call of Duty multiplayer, because the grind is so painless. I don't know. You don't play Call of Duty multiplayer, do you, Jordan?
No, I've never been interested in any of the Call of Duty games.
I'm just going to say you get rewarded for everything and things you wouldn't think you're getting. And, of course, the burn cards are really nice because it's basically cheating. You know, that's, by the way, one of the best ways to defeat cheaters. You know, like people who come in with wall hacks. You know, it responded, well, screw it. We're going to have a burn heart card that allows you to wall hack. Yes, the game is going to cheat just like you, so there's no point in cheating. You know? So, anyway.
I'm sorry. Are we talking about anything relevant?
Yeah, actually, we're going to be talking about Gaming Flashback. So why don't you take that, Paul, since you're probably more familiar with this game.
Gaming Flashback, Final Fantasy VI, also known as Final Fantasy III, but we'll get to that in a minute. Final Fantasy VI is a role-playing video game developed and published by Square, now Square Enix, released in 1994 for the Super Nintendo as part of the Final Fantasy series. Set in a fantasy world with a technology level equivalent to that of a second industrial revolution, the game's story focuses on a group of rebels as they seek to overthrow an imperial dictatorship. The game features 14 permanent playable characters, the most of any game in the main series. It was ported by TOSE, with minor
That's the problem with this. You're going to have a lot of Japanese names thrown at you.
Oh, of course. Let's give me the Japanese name.
Well, it's TOSE anyway, so.
Okay. It was ported by TOSE with minor differences to Sony's PlayStation in 1999 and to Nintendo's Game Boy Advance in 2006. It was also released for the Wii's Virtual Console in Japan on March 15th of 2011, followed by the PAL region March of 2011, and North America in June of that same year. The game was known as Final Fantasy III when it was first released in North America, as the original Final Fantasy III had not been released outside of Japan at that time. So, you know, you didn't want to confuse the Americans in thinking that they, you know, somehow lost out on five copies of Final Fantasy. The game was the original Final Fantasy not released at that time. However, most localizations used the original title. Final Fantasy VI was the first game in the series to be directed by someone other than producer and series creator Hirobuno Sakaguchi. Look it up. It'll be in the show notes. The role was filled instead by Yoshinori Kitayasu and Hirokuro Ito. Come on, that was pretty good. Like previous Final Fantasy installments, Final Fantasy VI consists of four basic modes of gameplay. An overworld map, a town and dungeon fields map, a battle screen, and a menu screen. The overworld map is a scaled-down version of the game's fictional world in which the player... which the player uses to direct characters to various locations. The three primary means of travel across the overworld are by foot, by chocobo, and by airship. The main menu screen is where the player makes such decisions as which characters will be traveling in their party, which equipment they wield, what magic they learn, and the configuration of gameplay. It is also used to track experience points and levels. Hold on. Combat in Final Fantasy VI was menu-based, and in which players select an action from a list of options such as fight, magic, and item. A maximum of four characters may be used in battles, which were based on the series' traditional active time battle system, first featured in Final Fantasy IV. Yeah, that says four. Under this system, each character has an action bar that replenishes itself at a rate dependent on their speed statistic. When a character's action bar is filled, the player may assign an action to it. In addition to the standard battle techniques, each character possesses a unique special ability. For example, Locke possesses the ability to steal items from enemies, while Cels' runic ability allows her to absorb most magical attacks cast until her next turn. The starting character was named Tara Branfield and is a reserved half-human, half-Epser girl
Esper girl.
Isn't that what I said? Half-Esper?
You said Epser.
No, you said Epser.
Okay, so let's mock the boy with dyslexia, shall we?
I think Paul is fine. I think his eyes are dyslexic a little bit.
Anyway, the point is, it's a fictional Final Fantasy exclusive race. who spent most of her life as a slave to the Empire, thanks to a mind-controlling device, and is unfamiliar with love. Who wrote this copy? Final Fantasy VI received critical acclaim and was commercially successful upon release. It is now considered to be one of the greatest video games of all time. And, by the way, receives the Novak Seal of Value. That's something for our longtime listeners. one of the greatest video games of all time, and on many major gaming sites such as IGN, the best Final Fantasy of in the series. As of March 31st, 2003, the game had shipped... 2003?
Well...
As of 10 years ago...
Well, the physical copies, keep in mind. We're not talking about digital and stuff like that.
The game had shipped 3.48 million hard copies worldwide, with 2.62 million of those copies being sold in Japan, and only 860,000 abroad. And now that's only physical copies as of 10 years ago.
Well,
this is not having to do with anything of the relaunched digital versions, direct-to-download, whatever. You know, there was also a sequel. I want to point out.
It's the other thing. It's 2003. Keep in mind, video games weren't the mega billion dollar. You know, it wasn't. It was bigger in Japan, video games. You know, than it was in U.S. because in U.S. it was still considered a niche hobby. It wasn't until like a couple of years ago that it really started getting mainstreamed. You know.
The opinions of Jonah Falcon do not necessarily reflect those of the panel.
It's not an opinion. It's a fact. It's a sales fact.
It's an opinion.
No, hard numbers. They're right in front of
Japanese role-playing games were considered a niche part of gaming for a very, very long time.
I mean, it's not saying it was bad. I'm just saying video gaming as a whole was still a niche in 2003.
Right.
No, I disagree.
If you say so.
How can you say video games as a whole was considered a niche market?
Well, we're getting way off the top here anyway, Paul.
Anyway, there was a sequel to Final Fantasy VI, which was released on the Wii Virtual Store. And it was the exact same mechanics and artwork, but man, was it more convolution to the story.
Wait,
I mean,
I couldn't
get more than like 10 hours into
it. Was it a sequel or just a reboot or something?
No, it was a sequel.
Okay.
This is what happens to these characters after the events of the first game.
Well, for the people who aren't familiar with Final Fantasy, every number, Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, always has different characters, different plot, different everything. That's why you have games like Final Fantasy 10-1, Final Fantasy 10-2, and right now we have Final Fantasy 13-1, 13-2, and Lightning Returns, because it's saying these are all the same characters in the same universe, in the same plot.
Right, so 10-1 and 10-2, those are in the same universe. 11 and 11-2, if there were such a thing, would be in the same universe, etc.
So Final Fantasy VI is considered one of the best Final Fantasies, or at least, you know, I mean, everybody has their opinions, but the consensus is that VI was the best. Now,
VI was definitely one of the best. It was fantastic. I mean, it was... Not without giving too much of it away for a 20-year-old game, but the world goes post-apocalyptic about halfway through, so it had the same kind of re-explorability that A Link to the Past had. So it was kind of like seeing how this new mirrored version of our world was different than how it used to be, in the same way that players would bounce between the light and dark worlds of Zelda. So it was just really kind of fascinating in that regard alone.
Did you play the original SNES, Super Nintendo, Final Fantasy, quote unquote, 3?
Yes, I still have my copy in my drawer. I might go back and play it after the podcast.
Now,
this is a phenomenal freaking game.
Well, here's the thing. One of the things that was not mentioned in the copy, but it's very known for, is the music by his name begins with a U. I know that.
You know what? The only thing that I can really remember about the music, because it's been a while... I mean, this is when they kind of set up, the songs that would be repeated for the next 20 years in the series. But, there's one point where you're playing one of our female heroes going undercover at the opera house. And she sings a beautiful love song that gets interrupted by a giant squid, which is a running gag in the title. I mean, this game is nuts, but it's fantastic. I highly recommend you play it. And if you can manage to sit through the sequel, somebody please tell me what the hell it's about.
Now, was the sequel released as a sequel to Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy III?
I could go look it up, but I believe since it was Nintendo, they still called it Final Fantasy III, the sequel or whatever.
Actually, Jordan, and the copy said that after like a year or so, they stopped calling it Final Fantasy III and just called it Final Fantasy VI from then on.
I mean, if you guys are going to make me turn on my Wii to go look it up, I will, you'll just not hear from me for a moment or so.
I'm looking at the wiki right now, and when they released
there's no such thing as looking at the wiki. We go to the source.
The when they released it for the Virtual Console, they released it as Final Fantasy III.
Okay. There's no crying in baseball.
This this was one of the few games that I actually bought more than once.
Oh,
I bought it as part of the Final Fantasy collection on the PlayStation, and then I bought the revamp that they did for the Game Boy Advance. They did revamps of Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6 on the Game Boy Advance, and yeah, it's a very good game. It's fairly. I don't want to say stereotypical for a Japanese game, but I mean all of the mechanics that you think of when you think of a Japanese role playing game were invented by this series, right?
I just think so, when I think of a JRPG, I think of spiky hair and torn clothes that make the clothes in Rent look like suits.
That was more fun.
Wow. Okay, so since I insisted on going to the source. Mm-hmm. It's telling me it's actually called Final Fantasy IV: The After Years.
Real? So what is Final Fantasy IV?
The characters are the characters from the SNES Final Fantasy III.
So, okay, that's strange.
Like Green Summoner Girl, Jumping Doohickey Guy. Oh no, maybe it's two. Oh, maybe I'm screwing it up.
Yeah, I think you are. So while Paul is looking over his Wii, continue on, Jordan.
Joe,
made a big ass of myself. Yeah, it happened.
It was interesting for me because I passed on all the Final Fantasy games until Final Fantasy VII. That was the first Final Fantasy game that I had played.
Well, you were a Fantasy Star guy.
I was a Phantasy Star guy, and I had been playing computer role-playing games since Temple of Apshai in 1982. So, you know, all of the Zeldas, all of the Final Fantasies, I passed on all of that until Final Fantasy VII came out. And I really enjoyed VII, although that was when I was commuting between Portland and Chicago, and it became very, very difficult to play a role-playing game when you were, you know, being away from home for 2 weeks and then back and then, like, oh, what the hell was I doing? I'm at this town. I don't remember. And then having to backtrack and rebuild what I was doing.
I'm going to fish out my DS and get a Dragon Quest IX again.
But I went back through and I collected all of the Final Fantasies. So I have, you know, 1 through 12 or...
13 is the last...
I have one through 13. There's a demo of 14 that's free to play right now that I need to take a look at and see if it's any good.
Okay. It's an MMO.
I have an official apology to make.
Uh-oh.
I was wrong.
It was a sequel to Final Fantasy IV, not 6, right? It was a sequel to
Final Fantasy IV, better known to me as Final Fantasy II, because I was like 6 when all of this happened, so what the hell did I know about international markets? But I digress. Yes, this is a sequel to Final Fantasy II that I was thinking of. But to be fair, a lot of the character designs are nearly identical. I mean, there is another green summoner girl.
Right. And all of the magicians look the same.
And all the magicians, I mean, there's a dragon knight, apparently.
Yeah.
No wonder I was confused. Dude, I was thinking of the wrong game.
Anyways, we're going to move on to gaming news. Go ahead, Jordan.
Amazon says Fire TV will boost mid-market games. This comes to us from Recode. There's no shortage of TV-connected gaming devices out there, from the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One down to microconsoles like the Ouya. Now, Amazon's own microconsole is here, and the company is working to define why the $99 Fire TV deserves access to your HDMI ports. In an interview today with Recode, Amazon Games VP Mike Frazzini said the Fire TV may provide an outlet for games that are somewhere between the casual-dominated world of mobile and the hardcore-friendly consoles from Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo that have reigned for the last decade.
Ooh,
It is interesting. I debate as to whether Nintendo should be called hardcore, but that's beside the point.
Keep it to yourself.
Well, here's the thing, Jordan. I think what he means by hardcore is that you have a lot of production value going into it. You know, the budgets are high because, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into, say, Super Mario Brothers, Wii U, that sort of thing.
Right.
That's still a high-budget game, Jonah.
That's what I meant. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Games made by teams of 5 to 30 people, he said, can be rich and immersive with fantastic artistry. The Fire TV's launch titles include Sev-Zero, developed in-house at Amazon Game Studios, and third-party titles like Mojang's Minecraft Pocket Edition and GameLoft's Asphalt 8 Airborne. Frazzini noted that the accompanying $40 gaming controller sold separately sold out its first day. Amazon currently lists it as out of stock until May 11th. When asked about whether the Fire TV would be a good fit for more complex games, he said he saw Minecraft, Asphalt 8, and Sev-Zero as complex games in their own right. It will be up to the player, Frazzini added, to decide whether to play them for 15 minutes or 2 hours. What developers in Amazon's ecosystem find will be one metric to watch, especially compared to its other gaming-friendly device, the Kindle Fire tablet. The mid-market talk is a noteworthy bit of positioning because in recent years, the gaming industry has been pushed to the extremes, leaving what Frazzini called a gap in the middle. Tiny teams, think Flappy Bird made by one person or Temple Run initially made by three, have hit upon success on emerging platforms, while huge companies like EA and Activision focus most of their energies on fewer, bigger titles on the console and PC. There are plenty of exceptions to that trend on both fronts, but touting the Fire TV's mid-market potential will give game companies sniffing around the box something to latch onto while the audience is still taking shape. One side effect of the Fire TV's Android base is the device runs the vanilla Pocket Edition of Minecraft, meaning it can play simultaneously with Android or iOS devices on the same server, something not possible between the Pocket Edition and existing TV playable versions on Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3.
So, yeah, the Fire TV was announced like a couple of days ago. And it's very interesting. And, you know, some people in the know said some of the games they saw in development were really, really appealing. So, you know, a $99 console, which does mid-level games, there is a market for that.
I would be very curious to see what quote-unquote mid-level games might be. But I think if they're right, if they could possibly hit upon this very specific segment of the market, they might be geniuses. They might do something very, very interesting.
Well, what I consider is sort of like those games that you see on consoles for like $29.99 or $39.99, you know, which are in between the, you know, the indie games and the AAA games. You know, we talked about this last year, you know, that there are very few like AA games, you know, in which it isn't a huge studio, but it isn't like one guy working in his basement either.
You know, like a team of, you know, 5 to 10, or like they said, up to 30 people.
This is like Earth Defense Force, I would consider a AA game, say.
Well, you know, we do see that occasionally. A perfect example, the original Dragon Age, right, was not BioWare's A team. It was BioWare's B team that did the original Dragon Age. And I think suffered because of it. You feel differently, but
That was still one of their – that was still considered a AAA game. I mean, you know, I think it's sort of like some of the games that you see on Kickstarter now that aren't indie games. They're large enough, like, you know, like Richard Garriott's new game, you know, Shrouds of the Avatar, and Obsidian's game, Pillars of Eternity. Those are the sorts of games I think would represent the middle ground, you know, the quote-unquote big-budget games on Kickstarter.
Right.
Paul?
No, I think I already voiced my opinion on this.
Okay. So – it's a 99 game.
I mean, it's going to be very interesting, but it's definitely a wait and see kind of position right now. But I mean, they could be geniuses. They could be, you know, walking off a cliff. But
well, Fire TV is also a major competitor to streaming services as well, isn't it, Jordan? I mean, games is just a little portion of what it does, but
basically, it's an Android style console box that hooks up to your television set and gives access to certain parts of the Android marketplace, along with unique content designed just for the box.
Yeah, I think it's also going to be competing with Apple TV as well.
Yes.
Anyways, $99, that is a very good price. I mean, you know, people spent $99 on something like the Ouya, which wasn't worth the $99. This sounds like it's worth the $99.
Right.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to our next item. Borderlands 2 Vita Bundle. Borderlands 2 Vita Bundle hits on May 6th. Game launches on May 13th. And this comes to us from Joystick. The Borderlands 2 Vita Bundle launches on May 6th, including a new Slim Vita Borderlands 2 and an 8GB memory card for $200. Borderlands 2 for Vita launches digitally and at retailers on May 13th. The Vita version supports cross-saves of the PS3 version of Borderlands 2, so you can pick up your game on the Vita where you left off on the console, including with the game our 6 DLC packs, Captain Scarlet and Pirate's Booty, Mr. Torg's Campaign of Courage, the Pyro... the Psycho and Necromancer character classes, the Ultimate Vault Hunters Upgrade Pack, and the Collector's Edition Pack. The Borderlands 2 Limited Play Edition PlayStation Vita Bundle comes with a slim Wi-Fi Vita with 1 GB of built-in memory and an LCD in black. And I know Jordan cringes at the LCD screen because he loves the OLED screen much more.
I do love the OLED screen, yes.
I saw an OLED TV that was being sold for like something like $5,000 to $8,000 at Best Buy.
It's very pretty, but you know, realistically, you're only going to notice the difference if you stare at them both side by side. If on its own, I think the LCD is fine.
Yeah. So we've discussed this. I mean, you're dubious about how that Borderlands 2 is going to spur people to buy the Vita.
I don't think it'll make people buy the Vita. I really don't. It would be nice if it did, but you know, I think when you have an older game like this, right? People aren't going to buy it just because it's portable. People like me that have Borderlands 2 are going to have to decide, am I buying the Vita version or am I just going to buy the DLC? You know, I have not yet purchased the DLC, which is really the only reason I would think about buying the Vita version.
You know, the funny thing is they're coming out with
really have anything else.
They're coming out with a second DLC season for Borderlands 2.
I've heard that, yes. You know, the only two reasons that I would consider it are A, because I don't have any of the DLC, and B, because I really don't have any other reason to turn on my Vita right now.
I wonder, since it does cross saves, if you buy this, you know, if you buy Borderlands 2, if they're selling it on, you know, they're selling it separately as well, right, a week later. And I'm wondering, does that version for the Vita come with all the DLC too, or is it just the vanilla version of Borderlands 2?
You know, I'm not immediately sure.
Because, you know, if you buy that, then I think since you have cross-platform purchase as well, you would actually get all the DLC as well for the PlayStation 3 version.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look into that. I actually don't have the PS3 version. I have the Xbox 360 version, so it wouldn't do me any good. Yeah.
But, you know, I tell you the truth, playing Borderlands 2 solo is like sticking a hot poker in your eye. It's just painful. You know, that is a game that if you don't play co-op, then you might as well not play.
I enjoyed it.
I know. The guns don't feel right. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Malinu says, I'm sure they're going to release an Xbox One without Kinect. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. Despite Microsoft's insistence that the Kinect is an integral part of Xbox One package, it is not hard to find people who think Microsoft should unbundle the 3D camera and directional microphone peripheral from the base hardware. How is this news? Still, when starred game developer and former Microsoft executive Peter Molyneux says the Kinect is, quote, an unnecessary add-on, people are liable to take notice. Speaking to Edge magazine as part of a cover story on the Xbox One, Molyneux derided?
Yes, derided. That's the speak derided. Disparagingly, yeah.
Hmm. Suddenly we're getting lexiconographical here. Derided the new Kinect's functionality as its forced inclusion.
I'm laughing because you sounded like Bugs Bunny there for a moment.
I'm sorry?
I'm laughing because you sounded like Bugs Bunny there for a moment. Suddenly, we're getting all lexiconographical all here.
Suddenly, we're getting all lexiconographical over here. Molyneux said, quote, I actually wish Kinect wasn't a requirement. It feels like an unnecessary add-on to me. Maybe it's because we're in England and it doesn't really use the TV stuff, but it feels more and more like a joke. My son and I sit there saying random things at it and it doesn't work.
Well, maybe you should stop saying random things at it.
Yeah, well, there's a thought. They could cost reduce it by removing the Kinect. I'm sure they're going to release an Xbox One without Kinect. It would be unthinkable that they wouldn't. I would like to point out that this is Mr. Molyneux's personal opinion and is based on nothing other than his own experience. Molyneux's criticisms carry weight. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I needed to take a moment after that sentence. Molyneux's criticisms carries weight because of his role at Microsoft during the launch of the original Kinect for the Xbox 360, following Microsoft's 2006 acquisition of Lionhead Studios. Molyneux's ambitions and ultimately fruitless virtual friend project, Milo and Kate, was a poster child for the Kinect when the hardware was first announced as a, quote, Project Natal back in 2009. Molyneux also finished up work on the Kinect-controlled and critically middling Fable The Journey in 2012, just before he left his role as creative director of Microsoft Game Studios Europe to start a new studio, 22 Cans. Now that he's no longer part of Microsoft, Molyneux's feelings about the promise of motion and voice controls seem to have changed substantially.
Go ahead, Paul. You're about
Paul would like to point out Peter Molyneux's long history of overpromising, and therefore would like to say that he remains skeptical whenever Peter Molyneux speaks.
You know, I think there will be an Xbox One without a Kinect, simply because they released a Nintendo 3DS without 3D. So, you know,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
At some point, they're going to have a Kinectless version of it. I have no problems with Kinect at all. You know, it recognizes what I say, and it does all the stuff, you know, and it does everything I want. And the thing is that my place is not big enough to do Kinect games, so my enjoyment of it is basically on the ancillary version. But I can understand why people may not want to have a Kinect. You know, I mean, it makes a lot of things easier. You know.
Okay, this is, well, as an aside note, this is why I don't clean my computer monitor, because now that I've wiped all the dust off of it, I could see exactly how many burnt out pixels I have.
Ooh.
That I
oh dear those.
Wait, you have I an know, LCD screen or a CRT?
It's my laptop screen.
Oh, okay.
You don't have burnt out pixels on a CRT.
Well, you do have...
So now I'm bothered. Please continue.
Well, you know, I had a pipe explode on me, right? And
was it painful?
No. I mean, the upstairs neighbor's pipe burst and water came streaming into my place. And the thing is that I also had hot water steaming in my room. And one of the things I discovered was it put little tiny divots on the screen of my iPad Air, right? And that really annoyed the hell out of me. Because I can see them glinting every time I look at it, you know. It just...
You need to clean that screen.
No, you can't. If you put your fingernail over it, they're divots.
Oh.
Little tiny parts of this glass was actually eaten away by the hot steam. Even though I kept it away from, you know, everything else. You know, I'm so glad I put my... When that all this was happening, I put my my Xbox One inside a plastic bag and covered it.
Yeah, you can get a glass replacement screen for the iPad.
Yeah,
I mean, there are places that will do that.
Yeah,
for
it
you.
Costs.
I think I'm going to have to upgrade because apparently Microsoft is no longer supporting my operating system.
What? On what?
Are you still using XP, Paul?
I am using XP. Do you know why? Because it is a superior operating system.
Actually, I'm going to tell you this right now, Paul. Windows 7 is pretty damn good. You don't have to get Windows 8. Just get Windows 7.
Windows 7 Pro works fine.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know what? They change the colors and the shapes of the buttons. It throws me off. I want it to look just like this.
Yeah. By the way,
why do you have to force change on me?
Getting back to related
to the Molyneux bashing.
Well, actually, I was about to say. Speaking of other Xboxes, you know, they also it seems like they're going to be releasing the white Xbox as well.
Well, and Paul, Peter
we
Molyneux
did it first.
Peter Molyneux does have a point in that a lot of the media features on the Xbox One that are so hyped are completely pointless in Europe because it doesn't support their television systems. There's issues with European accents that make the voice commands pointless.
And you know what?
A lot of the problems he's probably having.
I can completely get behind a notion of perhaps they're going to launch a European version, correct, which doesn't have that, which will take out some of that, you know, frustration. But I think that might be specifically done for that market, if anything.
Right. Well, the reason why I think it might happen as well is that there hasn't been enough third-party software that has taken advantage of the Kinect's functionality, even if it's just voice commands or, you know, waving your hand around, you know. So if
there
the,
hasn't
if the
been enough, of,
use
enough
it,
software
no
either first or third party.
Well,
that,
no, I
that
mean,
take
Rise,
advantage of it.
Rise and Dead Rising 3. You haven't played enough Dead Rising 3 to know this. All, you no. know, and, you know, and the you know, I think Microsoft would have been better suited to focusing on Smart Glass, because the Smart Glass implementation of Dead Rising 3 is really good too. I mean,
I don't know. I spent the weekend with a friend who has an Xbox One, and she used it without any problem. You know, she kept told the thing to start playing movies, to play a game. You know, I think
I have
it
to
was
be careful because I can't
well.
Say Xbox One. I mean Xbox On without it turning on without my say so.
See, I have mine rigged so that it doesn't respond to Xbox On. It does
don't
respond.
Don't say
to
that
Xbox
out loud, Jordan.
Xbox On.
I'm gonna be laughing if it turns.
Did it work?
On.
Did it work?
Nope.
God damn it!
I think you have to say. I think you have to say Xbox Turn On. But
no, it's don't make me say it, Jordan. It's not Xbox Turn On, and I know that because I say it out loud. It didn't turn on. You have to say Xbox Turn Off. It will not respond to Xbox Off because that is understandably something you don't want to happen. Even if it just, yeah. even if it asks you before anything.
You have to say Xbox Turn Off, and then you have to say yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a redundant confirmation there.
Yeah. Which I don't mind. I mean, I didn't mind before the latest they did another update because it wasn't responding to yes or no.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I'm perfectly fine and dandy with Kinect, you know, and I didn't mind paying the extra money for it. But I think at this point Microsoft is probably thinking, well, you know, we've had our initial sales, and now we can focus on the next generation of purchasers of the Xbox One, which will probably come with a price. Because getting rid of Kinect on it will probably allow them to drive it down to $400, even lower.
I would think so. They should be able to easily
and
take
$100
off the top.
That might be true, but if I were a developer and I was spending a lot of time and money putting in Kinect functionality, I would be super pissed.
Well, you know,
they started selling an Xbox One SKU that didn't have that because now they've just limited my potential customer base.
And that's the one thing. The
and,
why
I, and you know what? And I can understand. I'm not done yet. And I can understand business decisions like that need to happen. Things like that would need to change, and I would get over it. But I would never forget that they went back on their word that way, and I would be less willing to jump, you know, to jump in bed with them on a product in the future. Well, I would probably stick to Sony or Nintendo.
There's two problems, and the first off is that there really isn't any compelling Kinect content at this point. And the second part
Kinect
of
Sports
it is
Sports Rivals though is getting a lot of hype. And the thing is that Kinect Sports 1 and 2 on the Xbox 360 really did work well. So I mean, there's that.
I
just wonder why, you know, one of the things is that they should have had that game out during the launch.
They should have had something out during the launch.
They did. They had some software, the free workout software, you know.
Yeah, but you know, nothing really compelling. Nothing that made people go, "I want the Kinect for this."
What? You weren't into LocoCycle?
No, no. And even on the original Kinect, there was no.
No,
compelling
they did have.
Content.
They did have. They, like I said, Sports Rivals.
Didn't they have like a World of Harry Potter spell
yeah,
game?
Yeah,
they
actually worked.
No, that was the book of spells on the PlayStation.
No. They did have a Harry Potter that used Kinect, Jordan.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, and the thing is that you used your hand as a wand, and it worked pretty mm-hmm. well. But it was also aiming for the under 8 set. It wasn't
right.
And, oh, the thing is that
Well, that's upsetting. I mean, her first book in the series was written for an 11-year-old audience.
Well,
I mean,
okay, let's just say 12 and under. We're not talking about the typical, what's it called, Xbox gamer. Peter Schaefer did some really good games for Kinect, though. He did the Sesame Street game, and he also did that Happy Fun.
I heard the Sesame Street
theater,
game was good.
You know? Which one?
I heard the Sesame Street game was good.
Yeah, but it was
Nobody's going to go out and buy a $100 attachment for a Sesame Street game.
That's true too.
I hate to break it to you.
You never raised a toddler, did you?
I have not raised a toddler. Well, there
you go. You would how much money people will spend on their toddlers.
Nope. I'm on Jordan's side.
Yeah.
Are you going to be raising a toddler
would be fascinated by something else.
I bought the Kinect for the Xbox 360 because my wife wanted one. And so we bought that. We bought Kinectimals, which is the one she really wanted to play.
Oh, yeah, that was another good game that actually worked well with Kinect, though.
I think we played it like twice and never turned it back on again.
Oh, well, you didn't have your cat riding on a warthog?
No.
Uh-uh. That was the funniest thing ever. Oh, wait, what about Kinect Star Wars?
You're talking about the little remote control cars. Yes, we did.
What about Kinect Star Wars and having Han Solo and Emperor Palpatine dancing?
Quite probably the worst idea for a game I've ever seen implemented.
No, that was actually
terrible.
Terrible idea. That was from a
Mystery Science 3000 what the fuck are they doing perspective. No, absolutely brilliant.
Absolute
in terms of an actual game,
Watching Emperor Palpatine boogie down, that was the campiest, best thing that ever happened to Star Wars.
Worst idea ever.
No. Microsoft looking into Xbox 360 emulation through Xbox One. This comes from Ars Technica. When the Xbox One was announced last year, many 360 owners were upset that the system wouldn't be backwards compatible with 360 games. Now there's some indication that Microsoft is looking to remedy this situation through emulation. Through the specific timing or form of the emulation is still unclear. Microsoft's still nebulous plans for the Xbox 360 emulation via Xbox One come from a QA session last week at the Build Developers Conference, as reported by Kotaku Australia. When an audience member asked if there was any plans for a 360 emulator on Xbox One, Microsoft partner developer and lead Frank Savage responded, "There are, but we're not done thinking them through yet. Unfortunately, it turns out to be hard to emulate the PowerPC stuff on the x86 stuff. So there's nothing to announce, but I would love to see it myself. The change in architecture between the Xbox 360's PowerPC processor and the Xbox One's x86 chip have long been suspected as the main reason why the newer system can't natively play games from its processor. The PS4 saw a similar architecture change from the PS3 and also lacks native backward compatibility. Demand for backward compatibility was high among Xbox One early adopters that Microsoft had to warn users against a fake unlocked method that was making the rounds in December. It's still unclear how much of the feature really impacts the console's bottom line success among the general public, although some research has shown that it's an important differentiator for portable systems. In other words, your handheld consoles, people really want their backwards compatibility for. In any case, Savage's vague indication that some sort of interconsole emulation quote-unquote plans exist within Microsoft doesn't necessarily mean you'll be able to play a Xbox 360 disc directly through your Xbox One. It seems just as likely that Microsoft would use an emulator to allow users to purchase and download copies of the older Xbox 360 games on their Xbox One, similar to PS1 and PS2 classics available for download on PlayStation Network. I will say this right now. I do not want to buy games I already own. That would defeat the purpose of backwards compatibility.
That's correct. Yes. No, I understand, you know, the difference of trying to do PowerPC code on x86. I mean, it's one of the reasons that Apple shut off their backwards compatibility after a certain hardware revision. So, you know, you reach a point of diminishing returns. I don't see it happening unless Microsoft were to invest in some sort of similar Gaikai service like Sony is going to be doing.
I don't know. I do want backwards compatibility because of convenience. You know, I still haven't played anything on my Xbox 360 since I got the Xbox One, and I really want to start playing my Mass Effect games. You know, I want to do a new run playthrough. And, you know, I mean, at some point I'm going to be getting another TV, you know, because the old one is getting really decrepit. So that might be an opportunity to just have my Xbox 360 on the old screen, you know, the Xbox One on the new screen. I have a separate screen for my PC. There's going to be a lot of screens in my room.
That's typically what I do. I have multiple televisions, and so I will box up one generation of machines and then, you know, migrate everything around.
Paul.
I lost the thread of the topic.
Backwards compatibility.
Backwards compatibility is hugely important and a major decision maker in my factorial processes.
Well, in your case, you know, Nintendo, everything is backwards compatible. You know, the Wii was backwards compatible with the GameCube. The GameCube was backwards compatible with the no, it can't be because it was a disc.
It's not a disc only. You know,
even went
there was a Game Boy attachment for the GameCube that you could hook up to the bottom and play
also
your game.
My original GBA was able to play the old GB games.
And, you know, to that point, they've even gone out and bought one of these third-party knockoff systems that's got the original NES, the Super Nintendo, and the Genesis all, you know, compatible in there.
You know, years ago, Jordan,
you said, run out of all of that, you know, and all that hardware, so third parties can now legally go ahead and make that.
Yeah. You know, Jordan, years ago, we had this thing about one way that they could have backwards compatible, and I'm surprised that Microsoft hasn't picked up on it. It's the old ColecoVision way of getting backwards compatibility. You could have a special, you know, box, a small box that you could buy for $50 or $100 that's basically a tiny little Xbox 360 with its own drive, and it just runs through the Xbox One. I mean...
Well, that was the joke that I always made about the PlayStation 2. People would say it's backwards compatible,
no,
and
there's
say, yeah,
a tiny little PS2 inside it.
Yeah, I have a way to play PS1 games. It's called a PS1.
Yeah.
But the
real gamers never throw anything out here, Jordan.
I don't believe that backwards compatibility is that big a deal, and for the simple reason is that. The simple reason is that the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One both combined have had the biggest hardware launches of any console in history, and everybody knew going in that they were not backwards compatible. If backwards compatibility were really a serious issue, you wouldn't see the level of sales that we're currently seeing on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
There was another solution.
No, I disagree.
There was another solution that I had, and there was a rumor that Microsoft was going to do it. That Windows 8 would have Xbox 360 compatibility, provided you had Xbox Live Gold.
Yeah, that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, well, it's not going to go anywhere with Xbox Live no longer available on PC.
But that's the same problem. That's the same problem, right? The Microsoft Windows 8 is running on x86 machines, and
yeah, but
it's very difficult to run.
The PC is a lot more powerful than a console, and it could handle the translation.
PCs are actually not more powerful than consoles because you have OS overhead that you do not have on a console.
Well, anyways, that's not going to be the question of the week.
That's why you have a game like Dragon Age Origins 2, which is running on an Xbox 360 with 512 megabytes of RAM, whereas on a PC it requires 4 gigs of RAM.
Okay, but I'm just... Well, the thing is that it would look crude on a PC, but still. Anyways, hey, listen, all our listeners, just let us know what you think on this subject. Okay, so we're going to move on to listener feedback. We have quite a bit of it. Why don't you go first, Paul? From Alpha Shard.
From Alpha Shard, at EA deletes tweets, glad they removed the poor taste in tweets that was like rubbing salt into a wound.
Oh, wait a minute. Paul, did you know about this last week?
I'm sorry, I was having back problems last week.
Me and Jordan were saying that if you were around, steam would have probably been coming out of your ears for this.
What were we talking about?
Jordan?
So, for April Fool's Day... The person or people in charge of the EA tweet stream decided.
Oh, wait, no, it wasn't EA. It was DICE. If I remember,
it was DICE.
Their battlefield.
Yeah, they started tweeting a bunch of anti Wii U tweets, talking about how sad it is that nobody makes any games for the Wii U and so on and so forth. They were basically doing nothing but running down the Wii U through a continual stream of tweets.
No, they did something we're finally going to be able to play Battlefield on the Wii U and all that stuff, you know.
Well, you know, while I'll say that, you know, I don't think that bullying of any kind really has any kind of place in video games, especially having lived through the whole Nintendo Sega thing. the buildup that you guys had given that, I had thought it was much, much more offensive.
Oh no! If you read the tweets,
I mean,
the tweets were pretty offensive.
Well, there wasn't. Really? I think what Paul is saying is that there was something, you know, something that was mocking race, creed, or gender, or something like that. No, it wasn't anything like that.
Okay, I mean that's the buildup you guys were giving it.
Anyways, moving on.
I mean, there's only so many things that make steam come out of my ears. Flames from the sides of my face.
You know, people don't seem to understand. That was the third ending. It wasn't in all the. It was only at the third ending that she said that.
The flames.
By the way,
from the sides of my face.
A little story about that scene, Paul. You might find interesting. No one in the cast knew she was going to do that. Only the director, and she knew that they were going to do that. So all the confused looks on their faces are genuine. They're like, what?
It's one of the greatest lines in all of cinema.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on from Clue.
the tweets that they ran, first one said, Frostbite now runs on Wii U since it's the most powerful Gen 4 platform. Frostbite wrote, our renderer is now optimized for Mario and Zelda.
Okay, so moving on.
Yeah, that doesn't even sound like a joke to me. Oh, speaking of April Fool's jokes, oh my God, did anybody else watch the Netflix original series Sizzling Bacon?
No, but no. I did watch the Riff Tracks thing.
22 minutes of literally sizzling bacon.
Okay.
I was starving.
Sort of like Yule Log, you know, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of like a Yule Log, except sizzling bacon. I was waiting for the second episode to be released, and it just never came out.
Now that's comedy.
Moving on to the reader email. Reader email. I'd like to defend indie games, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, that's right. We're getting back to me. I'd like to defend indie games, going back to Alpha Shard, as you don't need great graphics for great gameplay. Fantastic. Braid is a nice puzzle platforming game. I'm glad you mentioned Dust and Elysian Trail, Jonah.
Tail.
Okay, fine. Tail. Let's pick on my dyslexia a little more, shall we? Thank you. I'm just going to insert letters randomly, so I'm saying the words that I prefer. That's what dyslexia means to me.
By the way, he writes indie, I-N-D-Y. That's not how you spell indie. It's I-N-D-I-E. But indie makes me think that Indiana Jones is somewhere around. You know, when he says it.
Exactly. That's why I was confused for a second. I thought there were more Indiana Jones games that I hadn't played yet. Not all the indie games are 8-bit, Dust being one of them. I just completed the game, and it was a fantastic and very impressive game that one person was able to do so much in making that game. Any game that adds to the diversity of games available to play is a good thing. I agree with you, Alpha Shard. Diversity is very important.
Jordan, did you check out Dust and Elysian Tale?
I have not yet. Okay. I still need to do that.
Like I said, it's actually, you know, from the Xbox 360's Live Arcade, which means there's actually a demo there. Which...
I need to look at that, and I need to look at it for a demo of Two Brothers as well.
Well, the reason why I'm bringing you up, there's a demo there because the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4. Demo? What demo? We don't have no demo. Yeah. What's a demo?
All right, seriously, hour and a half.
Go ahead.
Also, many of these indie games are on Steam and GOG now. Parity policy. I shouldn't miss a week because then I'm completely lost. It would be nice to have a luncheon parity.
They misspelled that. That's not dyslexia. They actually
That wasn't even my fault. That was
lock-in parody.
A rockin' parody like when Skyrim came out and all DLC was released on Xbox and PC first, and it wasn't until months later that PS3 got anything. That was really unfair that PS owners had to wait so long to get the DLCs for Skyrim.
I added a note after that. I actually responded in the email saying that the delay of the Skyrim DLC on the PlayStation 3 was strictly a technical issue, and it was so bad that Sony actually had to come in and work with them on getting the DLC to the PlayStation 3 version. That was not Bethesda's fault.
It was something to do with the hooks in the game, that the game itself didn't have the hooks for the DLC correct.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on.
Moving on, I think people are willing to wait, though, for the game to come to their preferred console. Take Minecraft, for instance. First on PC, then Pocket Edition, Xbox, and finally PlayStation, and each platform just adds to the sales of the overall game. And you know what? It'll add more sales if they give it a new feature each time, because then players will buy multiple copies. Some players will. Some really hardcore players will. At the question of the week, my favorite game-related April Fool's prank would have been when Mahjong did Minecraft 2.0. They got several YouTube Minecraft LPers to make videos showcasing the features of Minecraft 2.0. The features ranged from the ridiculous pink wither, diamond chickens, redstone bug monster, and exploding furnaces to features that were that we actually now have, like coal blocks, slime blocks, hay bales, etc. It was fun. It was a fun laugh to have, and even more interesting to see features that they actually are implementing from that prank.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to say that maybe it wasn't an April Fool's prank and maybe they were actually getting listener feedback to improve Could Minecraft?
Be. Could be.
I say no such thing.
From Paul Pretke. Hey guys, I couldn't disagree with you more regarding porting and relaunching titles in different platforms, even months after original launch. I think this is responding to Jordan and saying that people don't want to buy games that have been out for a year or two already. Saying that if someone wanted to play a game, they would have already done it doesn't make much sense in my eyes. I only own Sony consoles, and my laptop is not able to support even the less demanding titles since I use it mostly for work. This means I'm naturally cut off from titles that are not available on the PlayStation, which is why I believe it's a good idea on Sony's part to import such games as Fez or Minecraft on PlayStation to make those titles available for people such as me who do otherwise have no access to them. Well, Sony doesn't port them. It's just that they, you know, the developers finally got around to releasing it for Sony. But Sony,
The porting is done on the developer's end.
Yeah. By no means are such titles system sellers, but being able to play them on Sony's machines make it less and less probable that a given gamer will buy another console, which is good for the company, I presume. I agree with AlphaShard that some people, including me, have no problem waiting for a game to come to PlayStation. In my case, I don't need to buy all the newest titles since my backlog would be keeping me busy for months. Aha, that's one of the things that the young gamers don't seem to understand, is that once you're able to afford games, usually you don't have time to play them.
Oh my god, you're not kidding.
And if a fun, though, older game comes to PlayStation, I might consider getting it. At Infamous Second Son, I just started playing the game last week and I'm 4 hours in. I don't understand how quote-unquote dumbed down the title is compared to the first two games. Jordan mentioned that all the opponents are the same, which I can't agree on. I've already encountered four different DUP soldier types, and there's also the drug dealer, so I don't think it's that different from the PS3 games. So far, I feel it's just another Infamous game with a similar forgettable story and cool powers and action scenes. I enjoy it quite a lot. Jordan, you want to rebut her?
Well, the bit where I say they're the same is that it's the DUP soldiers are the same DUP soldiers through the entire game. You don't fight different enemies with different power sets. You gain the different power sets yourself. Whereas in the other Infamous games, each group had their own power. You would go from fighting ice-based people to fighting fire-based people to fighting other powers. And you don't do that in Second Son. You're strictly fighting these paramilitary types with concrete powers. That's pretty much it.
Okay, question of the week. I deliberately avoid news sites in April Fool's, so I don't really have an answer to the question. And by the way, I've started doing that myself. Let me chime in on last week's question of the week, though. I used to subscribe to a video game magazine called CD Action here in Poland. I think that was actually a British magazine, if I remember, because I remember seeing something like that on the shelves. What was great about it was that every month they would include one or two full versions of the games on the CD or DVD, and also tons of demos and other stuff. Back in the late 90s, the CD also contained funny pictures, GIFs, and etc. So it was like the offline version of 9GAG. I don't buy such magazines anymore, but I also don't visit video game news websites that often. I get most of my news from podcasts, and I don't mind the delay of several days before the news reach me. You know, I remember the PC Gamer disc. And
I remember demo discs from the 90s. My demo, that was awesome.
I'm just saying is that they had something called the Coconut Monkey, which was an animated monkey with an East Indian accent. It was just hilarious. So, you know,
that's only mildly offensive.
No, it wasn't offensive. It was pretty charming, actually.
But no, I completely relate to the demo CDs because that's how I first ended up playing the original System Shock. Was they just gave you the whole first level on a disc with like 99 other games?
PC Gamer actually released the entire Ultima 3, Ultima 4, a few of the wizardries, you know. And one of the things that was interesting about Ultima 4, and I think I sent it to you, is that Ultima 4 was 784 kilobytes. And I was able to send it to Jordan, if I remember correctly. I sent it to him via email as an attachment. Here's the entire Ultima 4.
On an emulator, the original Zelda is 7K.
Yeah, well, it had
7 freaking K.
Well, it wasn't that far removed from the Atari 2600, remember? And the games.
Yeah, but when I was 8 and the game came out, it felt like it went on forever.
Yeah, but it's tile based, you know, and you can probably guess how they were able to do it, right?
Well, yes, I understand how they're able to do it, but I'm saying that I had never stopped to think about it.
You wouldn't believe the amount of gymnastics that Atari 2600 developers did to make games on that thing.
Oh, I believe it.
I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, they actually
the first Easter egg
space shuttle on the 2600 was a mega feat. Because it actually simulated an actual space shuttle operation, including a few constellations, you know, on a machine in which it was hard enough just getting the score. You know, one of the major things that people had to learn was actually having a score counter on the thing. Jordan, want
to? No, I'm just waiting for the Arthur the Fifth.
Go ahead, then.
From Arthur the Fifth. At EA flogging a dead horse, that was definitely a lapse in judgment. In my opinion, every company should have an IT expert that approves all internal internet posts so that if he sees something stupid, he can find the person who posted it and slap some sense into him. It's not meant nice making fun of disabled companies that are impaired by their management.
Ouch. Okay.
Arthur, high fives all the way around. My personal opinion is that there's two types of people in this world, people who were slapped too much as children and people who were not slapped enough. Whoever did that tweet stream was not slapped enough. At Microsoft Indie, I played some good indie games on the Xbox 360, mostly ripoffs of PC games, DayZ and Minecraft, but they are cheap and mostly multiplayer, so make for a good blast. I absolutely don't care when and where they are released. If the game is good enough, I'll eventually play it. I have no problem waiting. Plenty of other games out there.
You know, some of the indie games have gotten big, like Cthulhu Saves the World was an Xbox indie game that became, and it actually led to them doing
Saves the World!
All of the Vita fans are talking about Hotline Miami, and
the sequel's coming out.
It's really, and there's a sequel to it coming out, and I looked at it on YouTube, and it just looks like trash.
Yeah, because it's emulating the old Super Nintendo. I mean, it's sort of like a mix, sort of like NES graphics, but with Super Nintendo capabilities, you know.
Yeah. At the question of the week a long time ago, 2007. Wow, 2007 was a long time ago. The website GameFAQs.com, a cheat and hint website, had an April Fool's joke where entering the website greeted you with a page saying that cheating in video games was a crime and you should enter at your own risk. I remember that. That was hilarious. That was quite amusing. Also, a few years ago, we had the Assassin's Creed Connect video. Wish that was true.
Anyways, the question of the week is, what mobile games have you been playing recently? And I don't think we need to ask much. I think Paul already answered that question at the top of the show.
I play a lot of mobile games.
And how about?
No, seriously, I play it's got to be like 3 new mobile games a day just to try and keep up, because that's like what I do for a living. And I only mention the ones that like I play for more than 5 days, because I mean, you just go through so many of them. A lot of them just start looking the same. It's like, how many seconds can I spare for this one?
How about you, Jordan?
You know,
the only mobile game that I play is Free Cell on the Microsoft Surface. Oh. I don't really play mobile games.
I mean, you know, that still works. I mean, it comes with it, doesn't it?
No, you download it from the store, but it's a free download.
It's an app. Okay. Recently, I've been playing Threes. I highly suggest people try that game. Threes, as in the number 3, Threes. I have it on the iPad. I don't know if it's available on either iOS or even on Android. So,
you know, I've had a lot of fun with Disney's Lost Light.
Yeah, you were about to mention that earlier.
Yeah, I was. You know, and the fact that I remembered it an hour and a half later. You know, that just kind of goes to show that it's a pretty interesting mechanic. Now, to be fair, you know, there are a lot of other really similar games that people have brought to my attention ever since I started mentioning that I liked this one. But you know what? I like my Lost Light. I like how it doesn't keep bothering me for money. I'll probably get around to looking at its competitors, but I think it's an interesting mechanic and totally worth the $1.99.
You know, Paul mentioning Light, Jordan, I got some new information about Child of Light. And mm-hmm. one of the more interesting aspects is that when you level up, you actually age a year, you know?
I understand that, yeah.
And everybody,
yeah,
and your relationships with other characters change as you get older.
Yeah, it looks like
Child of Light, you say?
Yeah, it's
yes, it looks very promising.
It's a 2-day, it's a 2D, it's a 2D RPG, sort of like Paper Mario, except
what's
with,
on?
What? It's on, it's on multiple platforms. It's going to be on platforms that you have, Paul. And it has very...
Yes, I have so many of them, you need to direct me. Is this on iOS?
it's on Nintendo platforms, actually. I'm going to look it up.
And now I've forgotten the name of it. Thank you, because you were...
Child of Light. Yeah.
Thank you. It's so hard.
Damn it. I have to look at... You know, it takes me to the website. The website never says anything. I'm just going to say Child of Light platform. Here we are. Let's go to the Wikipedia page. It's going to be on... Windows, PS3, PS4, Wii U, Xbox 360, Xbox One.
Child of Light, Wii U.
Yep.
Got it. Fantastic. Lord knows I need another game on the Wii U.
Yeah. And like I said, you know...
did you see what I did there? That was a dig at Nintendo. I'm growing as a person.
I got that.
Well, keep in mind, Jordan makes the same complaint about the Vita, so...
Yes, well, you share my pain.
Yeah, but... The big thing about it, Paul, is that it's very painterly. You know, it has hand drawn backgrounds and scenery and characters. Sort of like that's why
I've seen lots of pretty art in my time. But if I'm going to age every time I level up, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, it's actually I think you play a girl in this, so you grow into a woman, and you know the boy that you were with sort of icky.
Please tell me you're joking.
Play a girl in this. What?
Oh man, I'm really hoping they're doing a good job on this because the potential pitfall of inadvertently falling into something offensive. Her name is Aurora.
Aurora, yes, just like Sleeping Beauty. Aurora.
Just like Disney Sleeping Beauty. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess. It's actually inspired by Studio Ghibli. So.
Studio Ghibli.
Yeah. Woo! And according to the...
I don't really care for most of their things.
It's going to be a lot like games like Vagrant Story, Final Fantasy VIII, and Limbo.
And it comes out at the end of this month, doesn't it?
April 30th. That's right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. April 30th.
I have to choose if I want to get it on Xbox One or PC. Anyways, we've reached the end of the podcast.
Good night, everybody.
Stop that. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast.net and the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments at fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStudios.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us an iTunes comments. And Paul's game, Team USA's Pinsanity, is still around, isn't it?
It is still around.
So
It's preparing for the long and arduous trail to Rio.
Ooh.
But you have divested yourself of all responsibility for Pinsanity at this point. Is that correct?
I am now only there as an advisor.
I'm going to be avoiding Rio.
So if something horribly catches fire, I will tell them where the fire extinguisher is.
Gotcha.
Just, you know, that's the kind of level that I'm involved with it now. But, you know, it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed working on it.
Kind of like my job, actually. Yep.
Yeah, I'm avoiding Rio, too. It looks like I hated the first movie. I'm not going to see the sequel.
Completely different thing.
Anyways.
Fantastically different.
Yeah.
Jonah, I think, would love Rio.
What? Oh, I mean, the city itself?
Were you
Rio
to
de Janeiro?
Visit the actual Rio? Yes.
Rio de Janeiro? I probably would.
I think Jonah would love Rio.
Well, there's a lot of people that have to take off a lot of their clothes because it's so hot there down there, you know.
That is correct, yes.
So anyways, next week I'll be back from PAX East, and hopefully I'll have some interesting stuff to talk about. And hopefully see you next week yourselves. Oh, that sounds...
Don't hurt yourself partying too hard.
That sounded terrible. I will be probably seeing Larry there, Larry Herb, and Michael Pachter, so... you know. I also managed to book my I have my hotel booked for E3 as well. That's going to be in June, so all my everything's set for that as well.
Coming up so fast. It's all going so terribly.
I have to wonder what the post console launch E3 is going to be about. Now that they no longer have that big reveal.
Well, it better be software is all I'm saying. For everyone's sake, it better be software.
They actually, you know, there's one thing that might interest you, Jordan, or maybe not. I think I mentioned this last week, that they're going to have a new demo of Watch Dogs at PAX East.
Yes, I've heard that. They've been circulating that, and people that have seen it aren't exactly thrilled with it. They seem to think that it's a dumbed down version of the original demo.
Well, considering the game is probably going to come out in 2015.
Well, I thought we had a firm date for it.
This is like Ubisoft, okay? Ubisoft May never something. Delayed a game that they didn't like.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll see you next week, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, Bonds.